Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass. I'm your host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
And I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
Yes, you are. Each week we get together, we talk about cars, motorsport, F1, cars. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can watch us on youtube.com/behindtheglass. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on notifications. And Tony, if people want to support this podcast, what should they do?
Watch it.
No. But also head to Patreon. You can support us on patreon.com/behindtheglass. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. I don't feel like I need to apologize for last week, but I feel like we need to address it.
You mean when we was in the Airbnb?
No, the debate.
Oh, what? Okay.
You'd even forgotten about it, hadn't you?
The debate.
The debate. Yeah, yeah. If you missed last week's episode, Tony and I had an argument for 32 minutes about a BMW 2 Series Active Tourer.
Yeah.
And it got a bit heated on my part. And whilst I don't regret anything I said, I maybe regret the way I handle myself. But can we just, truth be told, Tony was just properly winding me up. I mean, at that point, we'd been on the road for about 4 or 5 days. We all knew how to push each other's buttons in a fun way. It was just, that's part of the road trip banter, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we sat down to do that podcast, and I knew Tony thought the new BMW 2 Series Active Tourer was an ugly car. I just knew. And it was his...
How did you know that? I never told you.
Yes, you... Don't start again.
What?
Do not start again. It was your utter refusal to admit that you agreed to that point that led me to then, you know, disagree with everything else you're saying. Again, you were making very valid points, and of course, I have to apologise for disrespecting your insight into the used car market.
No, you don't have to apologise.
No, but I think I was a little bit, you know, aggressive.
Yeah, but you was aggressive because, so, Sam's normally fairly hard to wind up. It's a much easier to wind him up in person. On a message, it's impossible because he just goes away. Just if you try it. And go in on him in a group, he just ignores it and goes away because he knows what's coming. But on this often time, I can reel out a fish and I can hook him and I can get him. And last week was that perfect time. And I could see him as I'm talking, I can see him in his face getting more and more angry because he's trying to get something across without being too derogatory and about being trying to be nice. And it's not working because I'm coming back with even more crap, basically.
The red mist just descended, at which point I lost all anything. Just, you know, the whole situation went out the window. And so, yes, as I say, I don't regret anything I said. I'm not going back on my argument. But I do think that maybe I was a little disrespectful towards you and your actual, you know, your insight, your knowledge of the used car market. I basically said, you know nothing. Because I was so determined to get you to admit that you also thought that car was unattractive. And until you did that, I wouldn't accept anything you said. So look, it was what it was. You know, if you're coming on to listen to this podcast to expect the sort of very, you know, mediocre chat where we disagree about everything and we don't have any opinions.
Does that happen very often? I mean, it doesn't happen. I mean, we agree about some things.
Porsches, mate. And Ferraris.
Yeah. I mean, our taste in cars is fairly similar, apart from the fact you like older cars and I like modern cars. But our taste in cars is fairly similar. But other than that, we do disagree quite a lot.
We disagree a ton. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, if you're coming here for a very sort of, you know, straightforward, down-the-line podcast, it's not what you're going to get. We come from completely different backgrounds, as you like to point out last week when
really?
You made out that I get picked up from school in a Range Rover compared Volvo. To you in the back of a van. But, you know, so this is just it. So, yeah, it is what it is. We're going to move on. Let's put that whole debate to bed. Any of you that were upset or offended or appalled by either of, well, mainly me, I understand, but it is what it is. So let's move on, because we are now back. You can probably tell the road trip, unfortunately, is over. We're back in the UK. My YouTube channel, there's still a lot of road trip content to come on my YouTube channel. But obviously, yeah, as I say, I'm now back. You actually left a few days before Paul and I did.
I did, yeah. And do you know what? I'm actually glad we're back, as in the two podcasts we did away, they were good, but you know, we'd been out all day, we'd been driving, and I just feel maybe the energy levels weren't quite as they normally are. So for us, we know if we think we've done a good podcast or not, or if we haven't. And I just feel that them two were a tiny, tiny little bit off par, which is why I was pleased that I wound you up for 20 minutes. Because otherwise, I think it might have been a bit more boring.
Well, that's upsetting. I quite enjoyed those podcasts. Good to know, Tony, that you were right behind the content as always. But no, hey, look, it's something that we discussed, I think, way back in when did we come out of the sort of major restrictions? End of June, was it?
Yeah.
And we were saying, like, you know, now that the world is opening up and we're going to be traveling again and working more and doing all these different things, it might become hard to maintain our consistency, something we've done so well throughout lockdown. But we said, well, we just won't allow that to happen.
And no.
If we're away, we'll either record two or three episodes in advance, or we'll just take the podcast on the road.
Correct.
With us. So yeah. I'm glad we did that. And I think it was really fun doing the episode with Paul. And we won't talk about the two series episode. But anyway, we are back. We are, so Tony's happy. And I'm assuming maybe lots of you are happy, because I think it's just nice to be back in the studio.
I think so, yeah.
We're here now. Yeah. Did you enjoy the trip in general, though?
Apart from, I did.
Clearly, you didn't enjoy the podcast.
But. No, I did enjoy them. But, like, you know, we've had this conversation many times before. I just think we know when we've done a good one and whether we've done an okay one. I would like to think they're entertaining most weeks, which is why we do them. We enjoy entertaining, essentially. But in my heart, I just know when we've done a good one.
Okay, you don't have to keep banging on about the fact that you really didn't like the podcast we did on the trip. Well, anyway, things have happened since we've been away that we need to catch up on. Mm. And then I set you a task. I set you a challenge. Did you remember to do it?
Yes, I did remember to do it. And we are going to talk about it.
No, but you're a busy guy.
No, mate. It was honestly harder than what
Okay, so
I thought.
The challenge was, and this is our main topic for today, to find five cars under 50 grand that we should tell our audience to go and buy right now.
Oh, go and buy.
What did you think?
Oh my God. I thought you meant like best value.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a reason to go and buy a car, isn't it?
Not really, no. Okay, because there's two different lists, I think. Oh my God, I have to think of another five.
We'll come back to it in a little bit. But first off, we've had some new patrons join whilst we've been away, so thank you so much. Matt Fraser, George Osterberry. I'm going with George Osterberry. Thank you so much for signing up. We really appreciate it. And I also wanted to shout out some long-term patrons, because we've had some people supporting us since the Patreon launched July last year.
Yeah.
So Kev Arkless, Serge Trushin, Jan Yap Keys. I'm not going to pronounce that correctly. Luke Fuller, MacRoy Fernandez. There's tons more, but it's a little shout out to say thank you, because
yeah.
We love our patrons.
For sure.
And it's so great. And it allows us to, well, keep doing the podcast, and it allows me to pull Tony away from work. I haven't got time this week. I said, but the patrons need you. And so, yeah, it's amazing to have you supporting us for such a long time and then also be getting new patrons. So we're very grateful for that. Anyway, did you catch any footage of our favourite car at the Goodwood members meet this weekend?
No.
What do you think our favourite car is?
Well, it's not our favourite car, because the way you said it, it'll be something derogatory that I hate and you love.
No, actually, we both dislike it.
Oh, right.
It's the Gordon Murray T50.
Ah.
That very special creation.
So I saw a 15-second clip, like a reel or something of it, driving around Goodwood. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's just address this in case you hadn't listened to previous episodes and you're like, oh my God, why are they hating on the greatest hypercar ever made? The Gordon Murray 250 is obviously from the creator of the McLaren F1, Gordon Murray. And it's his kind of, I would almost say like an homage to the F1 or like a modern day F1. It's still three-seater central driving position, naturally aspirated V12 that revs up to 12,000 RPM, something like that. Manual, super light.
It's got engine, is it? Is it a Mercedes V12 or?
Once again, the podcast that does no research. Is it not a Cosworth? No, that's the Valkyrie, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Gordon, that's so... Why do you have to ask questions?
Sorry, well, I mean, you want me to interact. I'm interacting.
I know, but Cosworth, it is Cosworth. Right, okay, fine. I knew something about cars. Okay. Look, when it came out, it was heralded by the internet as, oh my God, a proper true driver's car. And we were very quick to kind of go, oh, you know...
No chance.
And a lot of it was to do with the fact it's price, and that at that price point, there are a million cars like this. We didn't like the way it looks. We thought it was a little bit too F1-esque, as in McLaren F1-esque. And anyway, we had our issues with it.
Yeah.
But this was its dynamic debut at the Goodwood Members Meet. And it did sound good. I would say I thought it sounded good, a big shouty V12.
What V12 doesn't, though?
Yeah, at 12,000 RPM. I mean, it's going to sound mega, right?
Yep.
I think it looked pretty awful. I mean, you didn't really see much footage, but I saw someone tweet saying it looks like a spoon.
I mean, you know, it's a, dare I say, it's a low rent kit car, isn't it? Basically, with not really any.
I don't think it's low rent.
It's a lot of money to buy. But what I mean is that the production costs compared to making a 3 Series, for instance, will be pennies. If you get what I mean.
Yes, I assume the engineering is amazing, because it's Gordon Murray. The design, the engineering, the fact there's a fan on it is for a reason. And and the car, I think a lot of work has gone into it. And, you know, it's just, we just don't like it. We're just not big fans of it.
Yeah, but why is the engineering unbelievable? Because it's Gordon Murray, because he designed the McLaren F1 car?
No, because I think to create a car that achieves what he is hoping to achieve with it, a bit like with the Valkyrie, that can have an engine like that, can be that lightweight, can have that central driving position, can have a manual in a high power, high torque, V12, to be aerodynamically fantastic without having loads of appendages on them and stuff like that, huge wings and stuff. The car is quite clean looking. I think it's ugly, but quite clean looking. So I'm sure if we sat down and sat with Gordon and he talked us through it, we go, oh, wow, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I don't know enough, but in terms of engineering, to bolt a manual gearbox onto a V12 engine, I would say engineering-wise is probably a lot easier than them bolting an automatic because of torque reasons. A manual gearbox is more robust than an automatic gearbox because it's got less mechanical things inside. An automatic gearbox in double clutch and with a torque converter has got loads more ECUs and double clutches and whatnot. So loads more to go wrong. I think for simplicity, a manual gearbox is far less of an engineering achievement than a automatic.
Fair enough. I think, yeah, as I say, we'll hold judgment. I'm sure it will be a mega thing to drive. I just think...
Really?
I'm sure it will be. Yeah, come on, why wouldn't it be a mega thing to drive?
What, how many horsepower is it?
663 PS, so 660 horsepower.
Honestly, mate, probably, in my head, I probably couldn't think of anything worse.
Really?
A 600 hod horsepower light V12 car with a manual gearbox.
Yeah, I think that sounds quite good. I just don't like the price and the looks.
Yeah, I mean, and then I haven't even started on that. do you know what I mean? Just as a... I haven't driven it. I could be completely wrong. It could absolutely blow my mind.
It's not very up your street.
No, it's not up my street at all.
And the reason I wanted to bring it up, because it does sound good, right? Well, I think it sounds good. But they also released more clips of the Valkyrie, once again testing.
Mm.
I think the Valkyrie still excites me more. I know this goes completely against everything I just said.
Is it here yet?
No. Oh. Will it ever be here?
What about the Spider? Is that coming?
Almost certainly. But of those two, if I was in that world of ludicrous money, I don't know why I think the Valkyrie is a tiny bit more acceptable than the Gordon Murray car, which I say kind of goes against everything, goes against all my argument points. So once again, sort of, you know, being a bit contradictory here. But Yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to get out that I still don't like really like the 250.
No. I mean, I'm not going to argue with you on that one, okay, unfortunately.
Fine. Well, let's move on. Because the Daily Mail, go on, Daily Mail.
Really?
Posted a very interesting article this week.
Must be true, then.
off the back of our episode talking about used car prices. Oh. And the title was, The 20 Used Cars That Have Shot Up in Value in the Last 6 Months thanks to the Shortage of New Models.
So there's only 20, is there?
There's, well, the 20 that they've picked.
Right, okay. So, I mean, they could have picked any model because they've all gone up.
They've all gone up.
That's typical media that are absolutely clueless.
Well, let's see what they're... So I'm going to quiz you now. I want to see if you agree with their statements.
Well, I'm going to agree with their statements because they've all gone up.
But they've given actual numbers.
All right.
So, Vauxhall Astra.
Yeah.
It's first on the list. Average market value in March, $7,000.
Okay.
In September, $10,000.
30%. Is that right?
They're saying 47% increase for a Vauxhall Astra.
It's not my end of the market, but I'm not surprised. I mean, I won't be surprised. Statistically, they're going to know that they've just looked at the stats. You know, and
but it is the Daily Mail.
But it is the Daily Mail, yeah. and I bet the way they've done it is looked at the cheapest price yes. car in March yes. to the dearest price car now. Yeah. I don't think they've gone up by 47%. I wouldn't have thought so.
Fair enough. But this is why I want to ask you, because if you don't know, if you're not, well, I think the Daily Mail is such an international publication, isn't it? But they separate it for different countries.
Yeah.
You know, you have to take everything that's written on the Daily Mail with a pinch of salt.
Well, I think tabloids and normal news in general, mate, I just think you have to take it all with a pinch of salt.
I agree more and more than ever these days. But okay, moving on. Skoda Yeti.
Mm.
March, $10,000. September, $15,000. Another 47% increase, they're saying, for a Skoda Yeti.
Yeah, I mean, again, and then what are they looking at? Models. They're looking at a base model and then comparing it to a high model, you know, like...
It's saying here, Cap HPI, so yeah. You know, Cap, says a three-year-old model with an average mileage has gone up by more... Yeah, average mileage.
So Cap, for those of you who don't know, Cap is a widely recognised as the... valuation service for the motor trade. There's two big ones. It's called Glasses and Cap, but Cap is the one that most people use. Glasses is a bit out of date. But the way they get the figures for their models is, well, this is how they did. I don't know if they do now, but they did, is that they would pick, say, a Ford Fiesta. They would pick one model from that Ford Fiesta and follow its value, and then overall make all the Ford Fiestas the same as a percentage. So Cap is what we call a guide, and it is it's a guide. It's not they don't buy cars, they don't sell cars. It's all done through BCA car auctions as well. That's how they follow their trends, essentially. So it's a guide.
And so you would use that if a car's coming in for part exchange, or how would you use that?
So I don't use it a lot because the stuff...
Cap's up here for you, isn't it?
The stuff that I buy is what I buy all the time in general. So I kind of work for what I can sell it for and work back. So my biggest valuation barometer is Auto Trader.
Oh, okay.
So I do occasionally, if it's a bit of an odd specialist stuff, I will look at Cap, but it's not really relevant. And Porsche are a very good example. So when Cap value Porsches, they value them on a standard car. We know that most Porsches have between $5,000 and $20,000 worth of options, which are not included in Cap values. So, you know, you never really ever give Cap for a Porsche because they're always over cap, what we call over cap. So, and especially now in these times, I mean, throw it in the bin.
And it's weird that, isn't it? Because, you know, when you get a sort of what, an Audi RS4 or a BMW, I don't know, what does it, 330D?
Yeah.
You know, the kit that comes with the cars is fairly standard.
Yeah.
But, you know, a few options, technology plus, you know, can add, you know, 500 or grand. Would I be right into used values?
Well, again... on extras, if you have a car with 10 or 15 grand of options. It doesn't make it 10 or 15 grand more as a used car. It does make it worth a little bit more, but there's so many different variations of options now and all these packs that you can get on these cars. And if you've noticed over the last few years, Mercedes, BMW, Audi especially, they sell cars in packs now. So you have an M Sport Plus pack for a BMW, you have an S line, or you have the AMG is a very good one. So you have an AMG line, an AMG Premium, an AMG Premium Plus. So they sell them in packs. So they're all fairly similar in terms of the cars. So they're a little bit easier to price. Whereas in the old days, you would have, say, an Audi, for instance. You'd have one with a tech pack, one without a tech pack, one with a pan roof, one without. And it would be a little bit harder to value. But they did make a little bit of difference spec, but it's not what you think.
But is it, so my initial question was, is it different based on basically where you were at the market? So for an Audi, BMW or Mercedes, the spec options won't impact the price as much as like Ferrari, if it's got carbon seats and a carbon driver's zone, that will be more desirable and more valuable inherently than a comfort seats non-carbon car.
Yeah.
And same with Porsche, Club Sport, etc. So,
correct.
You know, up at the high end, those options make a bigger difference to future value.
Yeah, and the cap values on supercars are literally throw it in the bin. Like it's not relevant, mate. You know okay. what I mean? It's like it's not.
Don't do it.
Yeah, look, I mean, I wouldn't imagine any specialist supercar dealer would ever look at cap on valuations. That they'd literally just use their knowledge from what they've sold the previous one for, or what they're advertised for online. And again, that's a really odd market to price as well, that high-end, real high-end market, because it's very clouded because a lot of the cars are on SOR. So what they're advertised for can be loads more than actually what they're selling for, because people, you'll have a customer going, well, I want this for it. And the dealer just puts it out. They haven't even got the car in stock.
Yeah, I could put my 360 up for 150 grand.
Do what you like of it, yeah.
Doesn't mean that 360 is worth 100. Well, I might, Tony. You
yeah,
never you know.
Are, yeah, but no.
But no, you're right. It's skewed. But then take, for example, Magnitude or finance companies out there. Their future value, what's it called?
They work on cap.
They work on cap. Mm. So your residual value, that sort of final installment.
It's a percentage.
Okay. Yeah. So they use cap.
Yeah, so they use cap as a guide. Now, again, the specialists, Ferrari, Lamborghini, GT product, Porsches, McLaren, they won't use cap. They'll go a percentage of the retail value because cap's derogatory to it. It's not relevant. Whereas on a new car, it's a percentage of cap, and that gets adjusted monthly according to the market.
Okay. Thank you for the insight. Let's power on with this list and see where we ended up. Jaguar XF, 14 grand to 21 grand. Oh my God. So if you're spending 21 grand on a Jaguar XF today, you're overpaying, right? I mean, that's a...
Well, you're not overpaying if you need it. And as well, if you're part exchanging, you're not overpaying either, because your car's gone up by a similar percentage. So as I said to a few weeks ago, I don't think anything's gone up 47% from what I've seen. And I
just
do
you wait,
day.
By the way, this is 18th. We've got to get to number one. So it's going up and increasing.
Oh, order. No. Oh, no.
So this is basically, if you've got any of these cars, call up Tony, because they're going to be inherently more valuable than you realize. And I'm sure, are you still keen for stock?
No. I don't think they will be inherently more value.
Surely if you had an XF and you've had it for a few years and you thought it was worth 14 grand, it's now worth 21.
Yeah, well, retail, yeah.
Okay, well, I was trying to help you out there. But yeah. If you don't want the stock.
I do need some stock.
Just trying to do your favour there.
Thank you.
Bit of free advertising for the podcast. Yeah. You don't want it.
And actually, while we're talking about values, very quickly, is a bit of an consumer advice. Over the last 3 or 4 weeks, prices have really started to soften off.
Think the buzz has slowed down a bit?
Well, this is nothing to do with... This is just because the market slowed down. So there's still a shortage of cars, for sure. But the bubble of cars being ridiculous money, it's definitely stopped.
Mm. Is that a seasonal thing though?
Yeah. So in general, I'm talking from a majority, not a minority, because I'm sure there are dealers out there that do very well this time of year. But in general, me as a business and what I do, October, November, December is the quietest period of the year for me.
Fine. Interesting. So it could be a culmination of softening market and time of year.
But there is still a shortage of cars.
No. The shortage of cars, because some cars that I want to buy that just aren't turning up.
Yeah.
Mini Cooper, 10 grand to 16 grand, apparently. Yeah. I'm going to rattle through these a bit now. And if you're shocked by any, then feel
free. I'm shocked by all of them.
Okay. Ford Cougar, 12 to 18, apparently. Mini Cooper S, 12 to 18. We're still not even in the top 10 yet. Kia Soul EV. An EV going up, apparently. 10 grand to 16 grand. That's nearly 50% increase. Nissan X-Trail, 11 to 17. Nissan Qashqai, 11 to 17. Renault Kadjar, 9 to 14. What's going to be at the top of this list? A Peugeot Partner TP. Cool car. 8 to 12. That's over 50% average increase, apparently. Volvo V40, 10 to 15. Prius is apparently going mental. 53% average increase for Priuses.
It's all the Uber drivers.
Maybe it is. Hyundai Ioniq. Ford Galaxy. Addison Lee going crazy right there. They reckon 54% average increase in price between March and September.
Well,
Ford
Addison
Galaxy.
Lee have just done a marketing thing where they're going to hire another 1,000 drivers.
Wow.
And they'll all go in them.
Well, that's exactly it. Ford Galaxies. That's demand is pushing up that increase. Vauxhall Mokka. 54% average increase for a Vauxhall Mokka. Vauxhall Combo Life, 55% increase. V-Class. So I'm starting to see here that there's a lot of, like, basically minicabs.
Yeah.
They're saying that a V-Class in March, 25 grand. Average value into September, 40 grand.
Okay.
For a V-Class.
Yeah, I mean, You're now
losing.
I'm not having it, yeah.
What about a Vauxhall Sephira, one of the popular cars for last week? Yeah. I now know what that is. I'm joking. I always knew what it was, but that was me again trying to wind up Tony in. Anyway, I'm not getting involved with it. We're moving on. 8 grand to 13 grand, they're saying, for Sephiras. Mm. And then top of the list, with an average increase of 60%, Toyota Auris Hybrid.
Okay. So not one of them cars are on the list of cars that I sell, apart from a Mini. And I can tell you categorically, they've not gone up by 50%. Model for model, they've not gone up by 50%.
Okay, so be careful when you read the Daily Mail.
It's not correct. I mean,
no,
it's not going to be. They don't do the job.
I didn't think it would be. That's why I wanted to put them under your scrutiny.
Yeah.
I'm often here knocking Autocar's lovely list. Today, we've destroyed the Daily Mail. Anyway, should we get into our main topic for today? Because I'm now super intrigued. After you flapped at the start of the episode, I'm now intrigued by what route you've gone. Because I set you the challenge. I said, look, for this week's episode, let's find 5 cars under 50k that you, i.e. the audience, should buy now.
Okay, so I kind of misinterpreted that a little bit. In fact, I'm going to read the text that you actually sent me, because
you're
it
so
never
out
said...
Me. If don't read the one that starts Renault... No, BMW 2 Series Active Tour. Just skip past that one.
Right. Topic for Monday. Oh... 5 cars under 50k you should buy right now. Now, Sam never normally messages me about topics or anything, unless it's something like this where he does actually need me to think.
Need you to do some prior research.
Oh, I've read that completely wrong.
So what did you think I suggested?
In terms of value.
So as
value.
In like, as in these cars could go up?
No. In terms of what I think are a good value in the market. Because at the moment, there isn't really too much that's good value at the moment, because we know that used cars, and this is all used cars, by the way.
Yeah,
this isn't
same with my list.
This is used cars. They're not necessarily the best in their field, but I think they're the best value, essentially.
But I think you've hit the nail on the head. This is exactly what I wanted from
right,
you.
Okay.
It also is making me think that our lists are going to be so different, because imagine giving me 50K and letting me loose on Auto Trader.
You buy a 360.
There's only one available sub 50K.
Really?
Only one.
Your one?
Marketing. No. Dick. So yeah, I think our lists are going to be very different. Yeah. Now, are they all Gravelwood stock? Or
no, okay. They're not. I do need some stock, by the way. So if it's under 4 year old and under 40,000 miles, then I'd like to buy it. But no, they're not Okay. I've tried to think a little bit more out the box. It's not stock. It's stock that I've definitely had in the past and stock that I'd always buy, but I don't know how many of actually I've got in the stock at
okay.
the moment.
And do you have links to specific cars or they're generalizations?
No, it's generalizations.
Okay, so I'll do generalizations as well. Go on, hit me with your first, because right, I'm now so intrigued.
The first one is Alfa Giulia Quadrifoglio.
Yeah, which we just keep banging on about.
Yeah.
Now, because of the horrible time continuum, whatever, that we live in on YouTube, I don't know if this video is going to have gone live. I drove the GTA.
Oh, no, you said.
Oh, I think we have to talk about it next week.
Yeah, well, no, sure. We can.
Yeah, let's talk about it next week.
Let's do it.
But we keep talking about the Quadrifoglio.
Yeah.
Yet, well, you owned about three at one point, at least the dealership had about three come through.
Yeah.
And it's getting to that annoying point. I think some of the audience are being a bit like, put your money where your mouth is. Because I feel like week, I know you have. I definitely haven't.
I had one of the first ones, remember?
Yeah, I remember that was one of the first videos made on my channel with you. You getting the Giulia Quadrifoglio. So why, and I think we're going to repeat ourselves, but so why have you picked it? Let's do that.
So in terms of how I've interpreted value, right, is either it's lost, even in these times, it's lost a shed load of money from new, even in these times, or it's just good value for money list. As a list car, brand new, it's just good value. Now, take the entertainment system away or the infotainment system away from that Giulia. I think it's unrivaled to drive, mate, in that class. It is exceptional.
Price-wise, what are we talking about?
Well, you get on 50K. I would say a 2-year-old car tops.
Okay. The equivalent C63 and M3?
Similar
kind of money.
I would say the Alfa's probably held up, which is odd saying it from an Alfa Romeo. They're just a bit more exclusive. I would say they're all similar, but to drive, I think it's better than all of them.
I'm so with you. I was never a fan of that previous generation M3, M4. Yeah. And the C63 is fun, but borderline hooligan.
Yeah.
And there's something, I talked about this with Paul actually during the road trip. Something's happening with
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mercedes at the minute, where they're just crossing over into a slightly odd brand representation or image. You know what I mean? Like, there was obviously that famous thing of, you know, BMW people on the motorway sitting right, you know, 2 meters from your tailgate.
Yeah.
Something about Mercedes, I think, at the minute, they've just got a slight air of hooliganism.
Well, what happens is, as well, as we've said this before, is that all these, the big three, the big German three, Audi, Mercedes and BMW, they all have runs where they'll have a 4 or 5 year run of dominating, and that's them flexing their muscles, trying to gain the market share, essentially. And from 2018, 2019, it's been Mercedes, I think. It was Audi before then, and it was BMW before then. BMW are coming back. Audi have completely lost their way, mm-hmm. and are miles behind. In terms of just in
perception
terms of
or something, right?
What they're offering.
Yeah. I think the cars are, if you're an Audi fan, you're an Audi fan.
Yeah.
But there was that period of time with last generation RS3 and where Audi were just the best, like the coolest.
They couldn't do anything wrong.
You couldn't do anything wrong. No. Every car came out, it was beautiful. The styling was amazing. The interior was wonderful. It was super desirable, super premium.
Yeah.
But you're right, that switched a little bit. And even though BMW may be less of a driver's car, it's somehow opened its market up a lot wider. And even people like me are coming back to the brand and with the X3. So yeah, you're right. It's cyclical, right? They all go through these changes.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just Paul and I, but there was something where Mercedes at the moment, it's got a slight feel to them. Maybe it's because they're great value on the used market and, you know, people, there's too many of them out there.
I mean, they're not at the moment. Mm. I mean, you know, what nearly entered my list was a A45S and an A35S as hot hatches. But actually, they're really quite expensive at the moment because of what's going on. So I really tried to think a little bit more out the box.
And whilst there isn't an RS4 saloon, you're right, the Jula Quad is definitely my pick of the bunch. And three of that, of 2 years old, C63, M3, Jula Quad, always Julia.
So if you like driving, essentially, the best two is obviously the M car and the Alpha, if you like driving. And I just think that Alpha, I'm talking oldership, I'm not talking current M3 because you can't compare them,
of course,
to
different
prices. But in terms of entertainment and place to sit, you'd have an Audi or the Mercedes, essentially. So that's how I'd split the four.
Fair enough. So I've gone very much in the other direction with this list, as I kind of hinted at. So my first choice, maybe it's value, Panamera GTS.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So this is a 2016 car, which I think was the facelift. It's not the proper Gen 1, but it's still the what I call the bubbly Panamera.
Yeah.
It's not the sharper lines. It's got the 4.8 litre V8. I found a car here at a Porsche dealer, Porsche Center Portsmouth, just give you a little shout out. 50K on the dot, not even big mileage. It's 35,000 miles, I think it had, which for a Panamera, I think is half decent. Now, I haven't spoken to Magnitude about this, but it's coming out at under 900 quid a month on PCP.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, obviously we know how much of a Porsche fans we are, but something like that didn't go into my list because I was obviously thinking of overall costs
it's expensive to run.
And also, if you buy Porsche approved, you're fine because they come with a 2-year warranty. But if you're buying that on the second hand market, that's a
be careful.
Yeah. That's a
pre-purchase
huge
inspection
bill
needed.
Yeah.
Which I learned, you know, Porsche, this whole bulletproof build quality thing, it is a new thing. I was like, oh, surely a 996 will be just like a brand new 992.
Well, we had this conversation before, and I said from like 2009 they got there, and you went,
well, this is a 2016 car, so you know it should be good. I think it's a. I don't think it's a stunner, but I think it's a stunning car to get for 50K.
Yeah.
As a sort of a beast to just demolish roads. It is a little four-door super sports car. Not supercar, but you know.
GT car, I think.
Yeah, sounds great. Yeah. You can get passengers in it comfortably, well-equipped, Porsche life. I'm a big fan of that.
And it is good value because that car would have been well into 100 grand new, that car. So
exactly
it is good value.
Okay. Next up, sir.
So the car that I always drive and when I get out of it, think, why would you want anything else?
Oh, God.
It has its problems. Range Rover Sport.
Oh, exclusive.
You're having children, you're getting one?
No. Not yet. Clock is ticking, apparently. Sorry if I just blurted everyone's headphones on there, but yeah, exclusive. I've been invited to the launch of the new Range Rover.
Yeah.
It's weeks away.
Range Rover first, then there'll be a Sport after, right?
For sure, yeah. There's the big, new first new Range Rover in 10 years.
Yeah.
2012 was the last one.
Yeah.
That's exciting, isn't it? But yeah, let's go back to the Sport. You're right. I mean, it's become the Golf of the SUV market, as we've said before.
Yeah.
But therefore, it still ticks the box. If you rock up in a Range Rover, in it, it's got some kind of class, understated class.
Yeah.
It just does everything so nicely, apart from sometimes they break. Which is the one to have?
Me, I would have the 3-litre diesel HSE Dynamic. That's the one to have. Again, Like a three-year-old, four-year-old one would be sub 50K. They're 85 grand new. Even in these stupid times, they would have been 40 grand last year or early 40s last year. But even in these times, to drive, and I had to put an SUV in there as well because it's 50% of the market, essentially.
Makes sense, yeah, yeah.
So to drive, you know, every day as just a car that does everything, really, I can never really think of anything better, really, to be honest.
They are just still very desirable, I think. And I still find them personally more desirable than the big Range Rovers, but let's see what the new one's going to be like. But
they always have been, though.
They always have been. Their size is a bit more appropriate, a bit more usable, got sort of sleeker lines.
Cheaper,
always more attractive. But no, you're right, and you're right to include an SUV. So to flip that, I've also included an SUV, X3 M40i.
Well, that nearly went in my list.
Yeah, because there'll be one available via Gravelwood Classic very soon. Not with a sunroof, but still very... No, I'm joking.
A roof box?
Maybe I won't, because Andrew's finally coming on the podcast to do the SUV special.
Oh, good.
And he's literally said he's going to bring listings of all the cars they've got in stock at the moment that I should replace the X3 with. Damn it! But they've got five Defenders in stock at Alexander's Prestige at the moment.
Yeah, they're big money.
Five Defenders
in
the Alexander.
Yeah.
It's going to get expensive for me. But yeah, X3 M40i... So the new ones you can't get yet. I've seen like one on Instagram, if that. So they did do a facelift, but you just can't get them. And also, I don't know if I like the lights so much, the new one. But what a load of car. And I keep saying it. And whilst I joke continuously about selling that car, and it's purely from a fact that I don't find it exciting to walk up to. I never turn around and go, what a looker. Mm. And I don't go like, oh, it's like, you know, I say Defender, there's plenty of other SUVs out there that I can think of. Range Rover Sport.
Yeah.
You know, lots of things. F-Pace SVR. I'm like, with that car, it's just so good. It does everything. My mate, one of my best mates, you met him at the wedding.
Yeah, yeah.
Ume.
Yeah, yeah.
X7. He went out and bought the X7.
Yeah, yeah.
He's been a Range Rover guy his whole life. Bought an X7, the big top, you know, all the money. Yeah, yeah.
It's best Range Rover, not Range Rover Sport, that's Range Rover competitor.
Yeah, big, proper, like lots of money, all the kit.
Yeah.
And we were just bonding over BMW's usability, how their tech is so easy to use. The car, they take a beating. It seems to me affordable to run. Is that true? Like
more so than a Range Rover, for sure, because they're biannual servicing. They just don't go wrong, mate. In general, BMWs are very good. So, you know, even when they get past the manufacturer, obviously they do have their problems. So people chat to me saying, well, I've had loads of problems. I know someone who's put an engine in their M4. That is common, by the way. That happens. But in general, they are bulletproof BMW.
And the thing that everyone likes to knock in terms of like a driver's car, I mean, it's an SUV, so take a pill, is the run flat tyres. But I can... As a daily car in London, I'm obsessed with those one flat tyres. Yeah.
And actually, when you compare it to the rivals, it is good value for money. Yeah. And like I said, it is very hard for us at the moment to pick this list because of the inflated used car prices. But that was nearly on my list.
Okay, good. I'm glad, because you'll be selling one soon. So next up, we're on to your third car now.
BMW 2 Series.
Oh.
No. No.
I was going to say, if you say active tour, I'll punch you square in the face.
No, it's not in there. No,
not at all. No. Not even the coupe. Okay, fine.
So, Hyundai i30N.
Oh, out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's your argument here?
So, again, I've gone for value, as in the value of what the car does. And I considered the Yaris GR.
Okay.
But that car isn't good value because it's over list. So I really, and as well the Golf R and the A35S and that, all the hot hatches. But I tried to think of what the car does for value.
Agreed. Yeah.
And that
punches above its weight.
It punches above its weight.
And we often put it in the class of Megane Trophy or Civic Type R. Obviously, it's not quite up there, but it's in that realm where drivers can't... Are they manual only, the i30N?
I think they're just...
You can do an auto.
Just now.
Okay, fine.
Just the DCT coming now.
But so, more driver-focused.
So less driver-focused than the Honda Civic Type R and the Megane. It sits just below them, but it sits above a Golf R. It sits above an S3. It sits above an A35. So
in terms of dynamic feel and capability?
Correct.
Okay.
Concerned of how it makes you feel.
Yeah.
And again, I did consider the Yaris GR, but I didn't purely because of the values of them, and it's a little car. Another one I was going to put in was the Fiesta ST, but I didn't because, again, they're quite a lot of money, mate. They're 20, a newer shape one is early 20s, and that i30N knocks spots off of Fiesta ST in terms of capabilities and what it can do.
I was just about to ask you a question which came into my mind. Firstly, have you seen the spy shots of the new Civic Type R?
No.
It looks mega.
Really?
It looks more like a sort of saloon. Anyway, that's very exciting. That'll be for a future episode. What was I about to ask you about the i30N? Oh, that's so annoying. Okay, well, you know, you're right to include a hatch like that. And I think it's desirable. It's quirky. It's different. It's unique. Yes, that's a super competitive place in the market. They're used hot hatches. Yeah. But i30N, I think, has always been just a bit cool and a bit different.
And we always sell them as well. We sold one last week, and we've got a later car coming in. I think it's due in today, actually. Okay. So, they always sell. They're always good news. And they are, take the badge away. Well, I mean, we all know it's designed by the bloke who used to design the M cars. So it is a real proper focus hot hatch. It's really very good.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, I agree with you. But that's what I was going to say. Do you know, maybe comment below, I feel like a lot of people are selling their GI Yaris's.
Well, they'd be right to, because they're still strong money. You can't get them. And oddly, mate, as well, which I've noticed, a lot of people that own supercars have got GR Yaris's, like as their little trolley car, essentially, their little blast car. Basically, everyone at Supercar Driver's got one.
Really?
The members.
All the members.
They've all got Yaris's. I couldn't get my head around it.
And are they all keeping hold of them?
I don't know, because I don't talk to them, but it's just, you know, whenever I see them.
I don't talk to them. I go to those meets and I don't want to talk to anyone. That was amazing.
Yeah.
But because I know like four, maybe I think five people who were on the early Yaris trim, got a Yaris, I love it, I was so good.
Yeah.
And then have gone a bit off the boil of actually 3, 4, 6 months down the line. Has anyone in them 6 months? Anyway, a chunk of time down the line, I'm not so sure it's as engaging as once I first thought. You sort of plateau a bit. You plateau with the car because there's so much grip. It's so capable. It's so chuckable that after you've done that for 2 months, you're a bit like, well, what do I do now?
Yeah, and they go through trends as well, cars, as we know. And to be honest, initially, the Yaris had huge hype, and everyone that drove it, apart from the seating position, has loved it. Some people moaned about the gearbox and the throw on the gearbox as well. But in general, that car was very well received. It had a little bit of a dip in values and then kind of come back again. You can't get them. I think
because of the chips, or just
they've either discontinued them in terms of definitely to 2023. As far as I know, if you order one today, Toyota dealers that follow us will be able to back this up. Yeah, but
I think it's an allocation thing, isn't it? Because aren't they building a certain amount per year?
Correct.
And so that's probably what it is.
Correct.
The amount they're building per year. So I don't think they're discontinued as such, but they're just now waiting for next year's build allocation.
Yeah.
Okay, so next on my list, Mercedes.
Oh,
S63 Coupe.
Oh, are they 50 grand?
So you can find a few higher mileage cars. Here's one at 45 grand being sold privately.
That's a bruiser,
now,
that is.
Yeah, so my flip of this was a car that I've only bought a few at one point. It's the S500.
Yes.
So not the 63, but still, I mean, pretty much all the same car.
Yeah.
You're getting the V8, you're getting all the looks, the usability, without the price tag. And they're actually maybe more, if we're going down your thought process, more value, but because I put my list together, I'm like, oh my God, you can get an S63. Buy it! I just think, so we all know my love for the Bentley Continental.
Mm-hmm.
A 2014 Continental, firstly, still quite a bit of money.
Yeah, yeah.
But also not, I don't think, quite as attractive a proposition as the S63.
Well, in terms of tech, mate, it won't get anywhere near that car in terms of the technology in
that
car.
It's got the double screen. Yeah, so this is a 2014 car. It was one of the first to have that sort of double screen layout. So comfortable. And we know that Mercedes, because they're so heavy loaded at this top end of the range, S-class-esque, so fully loaded with kit, they do age well.
Yes.
Because you can get in a car thinking, oh, it's a 2014 car, but oh my God, it's got massage seats and air-cooled necks and all these kind of bits of kit that most cars wouldn't have had from that era. So one thing, I mean, higher running costs, yes, but you're buying a 5.5 litre V8 AMG. Like,
and would have been 120 grand new, that car.
Easy. And you can fit four people in.
Yeah.
This one's got the panoramic, or not panoramic, glass sunroof.
Yep.
I mean, it's a cruiser, classy cruiser, more understated than the Bentley, more understated than, I don't know what else would be in that sector. But I mean, look at the Burmeister sound system. I might buy this car. This looks amazing. What a thing.
I couldn't think of anything worse.
Really?
No,
why?
No, in terms of, just because I know what's coming in terms miles. Of, yeah, running costs.
Yeah, it's quite high mileage.
Yeah.
But it's a bargain. So I think the S500 is the more sensible route to go, and actually the car that, you know, probably should be on my list. But if you put an S63 in front of me, I'll be like, yep, take that.
Yeah.
Okay, next up for you, number four, please. You're going to have to check your list, aren't you?
M2 Comp.
So predictable for behind the glass. If only GT4s were under 50k.
I can't think really of a better little sports car for that money. Obviously, there are better. You've got a Cayman, which is obviously the best in class, but a good one is well over 50 grand, essentially. But, you know, a newer car.
Well, I'm trying to go. 718 Cayman, I don't think it's as desirable as an M2 Comp.
No, as in, you know, I've just to compare Caymans quickly, I've got a 2018 2-litre Cayman.
Just non-S
2-litre Cayman with 20,000 miles on it. I've got an M2 Comp 2019 car with the same miles for less money.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
there, I sort of sighed because, as I say, it's very predictable on this podcast because we've discovered that our entire audience either owns M2 Comps or GT4s.
Yeah.
But I get it. I totally understand why people own those cars.
Yeah.
Because it's actually the ultimate. When friends of mine ask me, oh, watch, like, I want to get a sport. I was just getting M2. You just can't really go wrong.
They just sort of do everything as well. And they're, you know, they're reliable. They're good value, which is, again, this is why I put it in. You get a two-year-old M2 comp for early 40s. And actually, mate, before this stupid price rise,
crazy market,
they were $5,000 cheaper. I mean, they were an absolute steal. They were late 30s. So, but no, they're 57, 58 grand. So they're still unbelievable value now. So,
fair show.
Had to go in.
So going back to practicality and usability, have you seen the last gen RS4 in some situations has dipped?
Yeah.
Now you had one of those.
I've had a few of them and I've got an RS5 in stock now, so very similar. I've got a three-year-old RS5 in stock, but this was nearly on my list, this car, as
so
well.
Yeah, this is an example. I've bought up a 2018 car in the green that was so desirable when it launched, and because hashtag Audi, all the kit, I mean, you know, and an RS4, you're getting all the bits you could want, lovely interior,
yeah,
great performance, great practicality. This one is loaded to the, I'm going to say, to the tits. There we go. It's got the panoramic roof. It's got the nice hexagonally stitched seats. It's got the sort of sat navs and the reversing cameras. And I mean, what a car.
Yeah. And the only reason why that didn't go in my list, because Audi RS cars in general tend to not be good value.
As so what that, I mean, you think that will lose a ton of cash?
No. They just hold their money, essentially. So that car would have been 70 grand list, probably. How many miles has it got?
It's quite big, 49,000 miles.
How much is it? 50 grand?
50 grand,
yeah. So when you think it's done 50,000 miles, it's nearly coming up 4 years old, 3.5 years old. It was only 70 grand new.
Yeah, fair.
You know, and it's still 50 grand now. So that was the only reason why that car didn't go in my list, because it doesn't, but they're all the same. Will it hold?
Like, if I went and bought that today in 2 years' time, will I be in an all right position?
Yeah, I mean, they normally do hold. Look at the older shape RS6, and that nearly went in as well. But for me, they have their problems now, that older RS6, in terms of to find a good one as well. You have got to spend 50 grand still.
An unmolested one.
They're a little bit like the Audi of the Nissan GTR, essentially.
Yeah, you know, RS6 is a Nissan GTR. You're right. They're just heavily fettled with.
And you know, they've got a lot of old tech, but they just have their problem. You know, they've got huge suspension problems, and when they go wrong, it's not funny. And actually, when you start tuning them as well, you'll do an engine or a gearbox no problem. So,
okay, so yeah, to me, attractive proposition, but you're right, you're probably paying a lot for. I mean, I still think it's a great car.
They are.
It's an all-round car. That down. Yeah, what a thing.
Unbelievable, yeah.
X3 replacement.
Yeah. But it's just all Audi RS cars in general. They really, I never think they're good value because they just always hold their money.
Yeah, no, fair.
A bit like a Porsche, like it's the best car, but they.
Would you pay 100 grand for a 991.1 GTS?
Or which is what they are.
We found that was.
Yeah. It's what they are. But I mean, as good as they are, they're not good value.
Grand. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay, final car on your list, please, sir.
I do need to check.
Yeah, Goosey Gander.
Because I got four of them right
now. Yeah. If you haven't got one, well, that's all right. But.
No, I have. Oh, one you'll like. And it's not the best in class.
F-Type.
It is good.
Yes!
But wait.
V6S.
No.
No.
The 2 litre car.
Oh.
As a sports car, mate, you get a... So if you compare that to the Cayman...
Right.
You get a nearly new F-Type for what you'd get a 3 or 4 year old Cayman for. It'll have more tech in it.
Yeah,
have loads more extras. It drives just as good at that level, and I'm only going on value, maintenance. You know, the whole shebang. If you're sitting in it, take the badges off. You could be in a V6. You can't be in an R, but you could be in a V6. So that's why I put the 2 litre. And actually, look at statistically, the 2 litre is the best selling one.
Sells over 50%. 50% over 50% of F types are the 2 litre.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna fight you on this one. So, better equipped, I would actually doubt, because unfortunately with F-Type, yeah, go with me here. Unfortunately with F-Type, as much as I love them, actually, since they launched in 2014, Jaguar haven't done a lot in terms of equipment. So, for example, my biggest bugbear when I first got in the facelift is at that top end, you know, the 100 grand mark GT car, you haven't got things like radar guided cruise control and properly good voice activated sound systems and what were the complaints, you know, just a lot of stuff which you do get on a 992 Carrera or an S63 coupe or whatever it might be. And so at Porsches and M2s and things, you can get so much kit. And F-Types, you just can't really get that much kit on them.
I'll tell you why I disagree.
Go on.
Because a Porsche,
yeah,
you pay for the extras.
Okay, go on, yes.
With a Porsche, you're paying for an extra. The F-Type, if you compare that particular 2 litre car, and I couldn't go R or SVR because it was too much money. If you compare a standard Cayman to a standard 2 litre F-Type, you get more kit standard on an F-Type, and loading them up doesn't cost as much either, which is why I went for it.
Okay, so you do know what you're talking about. Sure. No, totally fine. Very good and valid point. So then to flip that, my slight issue, and this is totally personal and only based on my experiences, is for me that 2 litre F-Type is gutless, but...
It is gutless.
Yeah, it sells by the haunches, as we discussed.
So is a 2 litre Cayman, though.
Yeah, you're right. A bog standard. But so I very nearly put on my list, yeah, V6S, the old shape.
Yeah.
Or even a VAR, because so much car for the money. And if you could even get a late, I think, 2018 V6S, the
probably
old shape, one of the last cars. You know, so you still get Apple CarPlay and decent tech.
Yeah.
And the thing, a lot of people come up to me, they go, oh, I've only got the V6 F-Type. I'm like, oh, what a car though. It's lighter on its feet, it's more nimble. They're not doing it anymore in the UK, so sounds great with an exhaust. But I didn't put it on because I was like, oh, how boring and predictable for me to be like, oh, F-Type, even though I've just ruined one that you've selected. So I chose instead manual V8 Vantage.
Oh my God.
Yes, because no matter what Tony's going to say, that car, firstly, if you rolled up anywhere in a 2010, yes, it will have to be a 2010 car, so 12 years old, basically.
Well, firstly, you are rolling.
Yeah.
You're not driving anywhere.
But based on what Aston Martin did, someone could think that was a 2020 car. Like, yo, when did they stop making the last shape Vantage? 19. So like, there's no way of really telling.
Mm-hmm.
So your mate's going to be like, oh my God, it's James Bond.
Yeah.
Now, talking of gutless, yes, okay, early manual V8 varnishes, you're not really getting up a hill.
No.
But it makes a great sound.
Yeah.
It looks fantastic. When you sit in it, so special. Mm. Now, Challenge the Road, I did some stuff with them in Subaru 22B, Richard. Anyway, so Richard and Challenge the Road are doing Vantage upgrade packages, resto mods. I need to actually go and either get him back on the podcast or go and film with him so he can explain this properly. I hope I'm not pulling the covers off something that's breaking
an exclusive.
Yeah,
yes.
But he is proving what great fundamental packages those cars are, what can be done with those cars.
Yeah.
So I think at 35, 40 grand, it's still a very cool and desirable thing. And I know you're going to come at me with, oh, running costs and it will break and you're going to spend another 30 grand to keep it on the road. But on the off chance that you're not, what a thing to have in your driveway.
Well, they have held their money, and that's the only nice thing. And they do look nice, and they do sound nice. But apart from that, they're awful. And as well, I will say that from a distance, they look lovely. But actually, if you get close up to one, they don't line up ever. Ever. I don't think I've ever seen an Aston Martin that not the new one. The new ones are very good in terms of build quality, or they're better. I've not ever seen one that completely lines up and the panel gaps are the same. And everyone's going to shout at me and say they're hand built. Well, get better people. To build them. Yeah.
I saw that coming. So at that money, would you have a V8 Vantage?
Anything else apart from that?
Oh, so you'd have an Alfa 4C, would you?
No. None of them.
No, but my point with the Aston.
You don't half think of some shit. You don't.
I said, don't give me 50 grand and let me go loose on Auto Trader. God. It will be a disaster. But my point being, the Aston punches so above its weight in terms of perspective, you know, what people will think of you driving up. You know, people don't really know about cars. The 4C did it the same way. There's very few cars at that kind of money. 40 odd grand that people could think is a brand new sports or super, and then go, wow.
Yeah.
R8's another one.
V8 R8 could be another one.
But you know, but again, I feel like the R8's weirdly dated a bit more because there's been so many future variants. Whilst the Vantage has stayed true to itself for such a long time.
Yeah.
You don't know. So
you could put a Maserati in there as well.
Could. I saw an MC Stradale the other day with the carbon bonnet, and I was giving the guy a big thumbs up. Yeah. What a thing.
Yeah, and people, you know, they sound beautiful, and people really sit up and take notice when you hear or see one of them go past.
You're right. So, look, we want to know what your thoughts are. Put it below. Let's go a bit more with Tony's original thinking. Don't be like me and pick all the weird, crazy cars.
I knew you'd do that.
Cars that represent great value. So, sub 50K that you think, wow, why are people not like lapping those up? Why have I not gone and bought one? What a great car for under 50K. And it could be a 20 grand hot hatch. It doesn't have to be 50 grand. But yeah, comment below the cars that you think we've missed or we haven't included.
And they don't have to be best in class either. Yeah. There just needs to be a good reason. Because like I said, quite a lot of the cars that I picked, there wasn't the best in class. But I think as an all-round package, they represented the best value.
Yes, and whichever suggestion gets the most thumbs up, Tony will go and buy.
Wait a minute.
His personal car.
Not Aston Martin, please.
Oh, by the way, how's the Roma hunt going? How's the search for the Roma?
Very good, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Found a car yet?
No, not yet.
Keep on looking, son. Anyway, that brings an end to this week's episode. Definitely slightly more amicable than last week. Thank you for not trying to wind me up now that we're back in the studio. I think next time we go on a road trip, we need space apart from each other, I think. Unfortunately, you put us in the same place for more than 4 hours. Tony and I just can't help but push each other's buttons. And he unfortunately got me really good last week. So anyway, we're back at it. We've got some exciting episodes coming up. When are you doing the YouTube special with me? Are you ready for that yet?
I can, yeah. Yeah. Next couple of weeks, should we do that?
Yeah, maybe next week.
All right.
We'll do a YouTube special next week. So a big quiz, big insight into what it's like to be a car YouTuber, how YouTube works, the ins and outs and all the dirty secrets. And then I think the week after that, as I mentioned, Andrew from Alexander's Prestige is coming down for an SUV special. So get thinking. If you've got questions, if you've got bits you want to know, or why is everyone buying SUVs? Apparently Andrew's the man to know. Well, he is. He's the complete geek and nerd. Yeah. So it'll be great to have him on. So yeah, lots of exciting things happening.
When's he coming in?
2 weeks' time.
Oh, lovely. So, yeah. Oh, we'll get you that one.
If you want to follow Tony, he's at Tony Gravel with Car Sales on most social media platforms. I'm at Seen Through Glass.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Most social media platforms. You can subscribe to this YouTube channel if you're watching it. Turn on notifications so you don't miss future episodes. And if you're listening to us, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you might be listening to us, keep listening. We'll be back with you next week for another episode. Bye-bye.
Bye.